What's up and welcome back to Kind of Funny's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in Review, a.k.a. TMNT in Review, a.k.a. Tumnut in
Tumnut.
Review.
Oh, yeah.
You guys remember Tumnut? Yeah. We're bringing it back, everybody.
How did I forget?
Of course, this is Kind of Funny's in Review, where each and every week we get together to rank, review, and recap different movie franchises. It's been great. It's been a long time since we've revisited Ninja Turtles. It's been a long time since we've revisited a lot of the interviews we've been popping into the last few weeks. So if there's a movie franchise out there that you love, that you hate, chances are we have been reviewing, reacting, and recapping all of it. And this summer has been absolutely packed with stuff. So you can go back on the podcast feeds or youtube.com/kindoffunny to get all of those. We've had some absolute bangers recently, including Secret Invasion, an MCU in Review. Even if you didn't like the show, even if you didn't watch the show, I recommend you watch the episode of In Review because it was an all-time classic. Greg Miller was unhinged in a way only he can be. But yeah, you can check all that stuff out. If you wanted to go above and beyond, though, patreon.com/kindoffunny is where you want to go. Just like our Patreon producers, Jedi Master Deadpool, James Hastings, Casey Andrew, Logan Delaney, Nathan Lamothe, and Patrick Delgado. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Our new producers in August. Joey, thank you for corralling those all together
no
for
problem.
Me.
No problem. I'm realizing that I accidentally told people we were doing this at 1 o'clock instead of 12 o'clock, so just fixing that right now.
Well, hey, there's a little sneak preview for the people that are here right now. Rylan Prince, the one person in chat.
I was like, there's normally more people in chat.
We also
right
had
now.
all of our power go out, so you could just blame it on that, Jeff.
Yeah, there's a lot going on here at the spare bedroom at the current time. Today we're brought to you by Shady Rays and Liquid IV, but I'll tell you about that later because we got to get into it. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Mutant Mayhem. This one has a runtime of 1 hour and 40 minutes. And it feels so good, Andy. Ain't that right?
It felt so good to get out of the movie theater and not have it be like, all right, well, I gotta brush my teeth in the shower. You know what I mean? It was really, really nice. It was a great experience.
It was. It was released on August 2nd, 2023, directed by Jeff Rowe, who's an American filmmaker and storyboard artist. He was a writer for Gravity Falls and Disenchantment, the co-writer and co-director of The Mitchells vs. The Machines, and the director of Mutant Mayhem.
They've got a winner here.
They do. It was written by a team of Seth Rogen, Evan Goldberg, Jeff Rowe, the director, Dan Hernandez, and Benji Samet. The last two, the writers of Detective Pikachu and The Tick.
Interesting.
Which I know you're a big fan of. So yeah,
the new Tick or the old one?
The new one.
I'm assuming the Amazon Tick.
Yeah, the new one. So
because Rogen has
watching this movie, knowing what it is, totally makes sense that Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg. And the team that did The Tick and Detective Pikachu. Mm-hmm. All of this starts to make a lot of sense, right? Music was done by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, Nine Inch Nails. Beginning in 2010, Reznor, alongside Atticus Ross, began to work on film and television scores. The duo have scored many of David Fincher's films, including The Social Network, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Gone Girl, and Mank. I don't know what Mank is.
Mank. I think it was the Gary Oldman movie. It's like an old Hollywood. I don't know.
It's also Network score is so good.
It was
a
Netflix movie. Thing.
It really is. And they also did Soul for Pixar in 2020, which they won the Grammy for Best Score for both Social Network and Soul. So that's cool. And they also won the Academy Award for Best Original Score. Oh, no, for both of those as well. There's winners out here.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. They also did the Watchmen series on HBO.
Oh, yes, so, dude. God damn. I need to watch that show again. So
did they only ever do one season of it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what
it was supposed to be one and done, and then I think they had talked about like maybe doing something else with it.
They always get that one confused with Westworld, where everybody that really one, liked it no, and but I, kept going, right?
I believe that I'm blanking on the Damon Lindelof. I believe that Lindelof was like, no, I don't want to do another season. It was only ever supposed to be one, you know?
And it was great.
It's phenomenal, Joey. One day you'll watch it, and it is like
I've never read the comic or watched the movie.
That
or,
this like you're probably in a better spot even to go into this one. But
I would say you gotta actually do those.
Imagine all the superhero shows, Joe, but like
I'm so tired.
Like real good, like one that like I made my family watch, and they were like, "Wow, really impressive."
This one had a budget. You guys want to guess the budget on this? I know I just throw a lot of numbers.
I'm gonna guess 50
mil. Well, here's 50 mil.
Yeah,
for an animated movie,
100 mil.
I think it's 90.
I'm gonna do the game. the game that's often known, like if you're a Levitar listener, where you have to guess real low so that the punchline is very, very surprising. I'm going to guess, I don't know, $1 million, Tim.
Wow, $1 million. It's actually $70 million.
Whoa!
which surprised me, though. Like,
I played the game wrong.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
I was supposed to say higher.
I was going to say 400.
But yeah, this looks like a much more expensive movie. I feel like they kind of did a really good job with the budget that they had, with the voice cast that they had and all that. So I don't know. It's too early to tell the box office at this point because technically the movie's not even out yet. Or I guess it's officially right now out. But the early tracking seems really good. The cinema's back, everybody. Yeah. We all understand that.
Is there a reason why it came out on like a weird day of the week?
Very confusing.
Summer movies normally do.
Oh, okay.
There's usually, but like we're so deep into it. I honestly think everybody's just trying. Tumnut is the fucking best thing to happen. But yeah, I think that it's just because they're trying to want to maximize that weekend, you know, for the summer.
Oh,
so they want them
the
Wednesday
up.
To Sunday counts, whatever, all that. But I also think at this point people are just trying to find their place.
It's also like the final weeks of summer vacation. Yeah. So it's just like, hey, let's have something our parents can take take the kids to, you know?
And they definitely should, and I think that they're going to. But already it's performing well enough that a sequel has been greenlit.
Yes.
In addition to that, a spin-off television series for Paramount Plus that's going to bridge the two with the cast of this.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, I imagine it'll be a different style.
It's actually going to happen.
I think it will happen. I think it's going to be a 2D style, I'm guessing. Mm. I don't think it's going to be the look and vibe of this because that just doesn't make financial sense.
Yeah.
But could be interesting. We will wait and we will see at some point. I want to start with Nick Scarpino. What did you think of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem? Actually, can I cut you off?
Sure.
I want to tell a quick story.
Yeah, go for it.
Something happened last night that made me feel so good. About 20 minutes into this movie, Nick leans over to me and just goes, how is this real? Yeah. This is a fever. How are we watching this right now? And it gave me chills hearing him say that because I've seen this movie twice now, and I agree entirely. But to hear Nick feel that way, oh, that felt special. So, Nick, what did you think about this one?
Going into this, I was assuming it would be sort of a little bit more mainstream cookie cutter animated movie, TMNT, similar to the animated movies we watched before in the franchise. And I was pleasantly shocked and surprised at how weird and fun and this movie is. Looking forward to the art style, obviously, but when you have an art style like that, it's very seldom that you have a vibe that backs that up. And they leaned in so incredibly hard to the vibe of this movie, and it was right up my alley. It reminded me a lot of like early Liquid Television, where you'd see like a...
What is that?
Liquid Television was like an MTV, really late night, weird
Adult
ass
Swim,
thing.
But oh, before.
But you, before that, but like...
You felt wrong watching it. Yeah. I was like maybe 5 years old, 6 years old. I was like, this is not like...
That's too scary.
This is not like what I'm used to seeing with Doug and stuff.
Yeah.
It was like animation, but not made for kids. Like animation you'd see in like an indie film festival.
Aeon Flux.
Where, yeah, Aeon Flux is a perfect example. And that's exactly what this reminded me of, where it's off-putting, it's very adult, it's very shocking, it both visually and sort of like the tone of it. But in this... They did a great job, I think, of marrying that style with a kind of an 80s vibe with the Atticus Ross and Trent Reznor music. And then having fun with it and having the humor kind of back that up to be a little bit weird and a little bit self-aware and a little bit, I don't know. Overall, the vibe of this movie hit really, really well with me. I really enjoyed it. It was one of the rare movies I've seen in a very long time where I'm like, that could have been 20 minutes longer, and I would have been okay with it. Not that it wasn't perfect.
Yeah.
It was absolutely perfect. I walked away absolutely wanting more, but I would like them to do more in this franchise. I would like to see these characters more. I think overall, the voice actors across the board nailed it. Granted, these people have now worked together in movies in some combination of all them, probably like 30 movies at this point. But it was just really, really fun. It was good. And by the end of it, the one thing I will say that I was shocked by is that they built tension, and I actually gave a shit about what was happening when they were fighting the big baddie at the end. Very good movie. Very, very worth your time. See it in theaters.
Joe, you were the newest entrant to Ninja Turtles as a franchise, with In Review being your first introduction to the boys.
Yeah. It was so funny. Even on the way to the movie last night, I was on the phone with my mom, and she was like, oh, oh, you're seeing the new Ninja Turtles movie. You love Ninja Turtles. I was like, do I? And she was like, yeah, like I used to, because like when I was really little, my mom used to go to work really early. And then my dad used to take me to like daycare, and then my mom would pick me up early. They would, you know, you had to do the balance of the jobs and all of that stuff. She's like, yeah, like every morning you and your dad would watch like Ninja Turtles. I'm like, man, I don't remember any of this, but apparently it's somewhere deep in my being.
The recesses of your mind.
Yeah, exactly. But I had a really good time with this one. I think this is the first one where they actually feel like teenagers, considering that's part of their title. I think like just the banter between all of them, especially in the moments where they're all like talking over each other nervously, just feels right for like teenage kids, like just trying to talk their way in or out of something. The music is great. The art style is that perfect blend of like, especially for all these creatures, of like weirdly gross, but you're into it. Mm-hmm. Which I don't necessarily think we've gotten from some of the more recent-ish ones that we've watched. The music is fucking bangers after bangers. It's so fun to watch. And this is one of those rare kids movies, I guess.
This is not a kids movie.
I used air quotes, yeah, kids movie, but like in our entire theater, it was mostly kids and then us, but I felt like we were all laughing way more than anybody else in the theater. So I feel like that speaks to your point that it's like not really,
well,
or it speaking to the right audience or to the older audience of TMNT fans.
That's why I loved it, was because it was one of the rare kids movies that you go watch as an adult. You're like, this is not a kids movie. There's a lot. At one point, spoilers, there's a monster that if I had, at the end of this, that has horses for legs, and if I had watched this when I was like 10, would have given me nightmares. But it would have been my favorite fucking movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would have been like, this is incredible. I'm terrified to watch this. And you'd be like watching it from underneath a blanket with popcorn. That they just don't make kids movies.
Is there
like
pickle twang on that popcorn?
There was a lot, but I got a funny story about that. Real funny story.
Uh-oh.
Real funny story.
Left the theater last night. I was like, I'm gonna go for a workout. Went over to my jiu-jitsu gym for to get a class in. 5 minutes into the first roll, my heart pounding out of my chest. I'm like, what? Why am I having trouble like breathing right now? And I realized it's because I took down probably 700 milligrams of pickle twain salt, and my blood pressure was through the roof.
I didn't feel like you poured a whole lot in there.
But the popcorn at the Regal Cinema,
it's
granted,
so
Regal
good.
Cinema, Pepsi. We've talked about that ad nauseum, but just remember it's Pepsi Place, so it's already automatically 5% lower than I want it to be. But that popcorn, real crunchy, real salty.
Real good. Real salty. I'll tell you what, my favorite thing about it is that they always have in stock my favorite energy drink ever. An energy drink I have trouble finding at stores because like, it's just not always readily available. And that is the Mountain Dew Rise drink, the one that like LeBron was like promoting. And it's
I hate
like,
that it feels like a threat.
It's like blueberry or something. Mountain Dew, right? It was so, it's so good. And anytime I see it there, I get so happy. I'm like, I'm about to drink my favorite energy drink ever. I'm about to watch a movie that I'm really going to dig. My thoughts on the movie, I think this movie rules. This is such a freaking fun time. It is adorable. And I say that mainly because I love the Turtles as a cast and how they bounce off of each other and just all of the little inner workings of their dynamics and their relationships are just so sweet and endearing to watch. Their relationship with Jackie Chan, who plays Splinter,
great,
is incredible. Amazing. I loved his performance. I think Paul Rudd stole the show for me in several moments. His character, Mondo Gecko, is one of the funniest fucking so things good. You will ever see.
How does he do it?
He's just perfect.
Anybody realize it was Paul
no.
before the end? I didn't I either. Did. Oh, okay.
I was desperately. I went over to Tim because he was kind of walking me through it, and he had actually blew my mind. You told me it was April O'Neil was the voice, the actress who is on the bear, and I was like, oh my god, yes, she's perfect in this. Jackie Chan, first off, incredible.
So good.
Ayo, incredible. Halfway through, I'm like, who is doing this voice for Mondo? Because it's so good. And he's like, it's Paul Rudd. I'm like, yeah. Of course it is.
People, of course it's Paul
they
Rudd.
They gots to go.
You could tell. I mean, again, it's just I always just feel immense jealousy watching these movies because I want to be in that friend group. And I
so
want
bad.
Seth Rogen to be like, hey, so you're bad. One of my funny friends. Come get in the booth with me and just voice this character. And you know that like so much of it is just improv, you know, like they're just kind of like saying whatever they think is funny. I loved Post Malone as the filet.
Ray filet.
Yeah. Just that intro of him doing freaking.
Pruning.
Yeah, just singing, like, hilarious. I think the cast was just absolutely knocked it out of this park. I'm usually pretty 50-50 on Ice Cube, and this is probably my favorite Ice Cube role ever, and that's because in 21 Jump Street, I've always felt like there were moments where he was just a little too much in some spots, and it's like I always enjoyed like 70-80% of Ice Cube in Jump Street movies. Here, it's just like everything was pitch perfect. This movie was a freaking blast.
The way he says tortoises, just the word is fucking funny.
But I think this speaks to the actual writing and the actual movie. They made a good movie here. And sometimes you make a bad movie and you get an incredible voice cast together and they kind of carry it forward, but you're like, that left me with kind of a sour taste in my mouth. This feels like one of those movies that like you didn't know was being made and they went away and they just gave him some of the good, just go to this thing. And this incredibly talented group of people came together and made this badass thing and then shock you with it. I was like legit scared of him in this movie. They gave him something to do and he really wrapped his arms around it, I guess. I don't know.
All four of his arms.
Yeah. But it really worked out well.
Yeah, he was phenomenal. Again, the cast just sunk his killed it. The art style, I was a huge fan of. The art style just kind of reminded me of every once in a while we see an indie game debut at some presentation. You're like, holy shit, this art style is really damn cool. And it really felt like that sort of like, again, the brush, everything's very, very artsy looking. Everything looks like it's very hand-drawn with how the textures work, with how the lighting works. Even the lens flares are all just little drawings and things like that. And the character designs, I thought, were so unconventional and so odd to see in what is going to be a mass market kind of television or movie, rather. You're not used to seeing this in something that is going to grab the mass market and be, it's a household name IP. You would never see Disney or Pixar attempt something with this look. It's so unique. It's so unconventional. It reminded me, and Barrett will understand this, it reminded me of playing Psychonauts. Every character in this movie, the way they are modeled, everything's so asymmetrical. People have weird jaws and the humans all look fucking
disproportionate. It reminded me more of Garbage Pail Kids Come to Life.
Yeah, I was good. That was exactly what
I thought. Just like the way the characters looked, very like Tim Burton-esque as well, just in terms of like, look, we don't have to adhere to any standards here. They're proportionate. The proportions can be whatever the hell we want them to be in this world. I love the art style. I love this movie. It is a absolute must watch in theater. I can't wait to watch it again. When I go back home, I hope my parents or whatever don't take my nieces and nephew to go see it, because I want to go see it again. It's such a good time. And it's movies like this that, I don't want to be the downer here, Tim, but like it's movies like this that make me really bummed that Nintendo is partnering with Illumination. It's just like, again, this writing team is so good. And I want more from writing teams like this, or like what I always mentioned, the Lord and Miller takes on the Lego movies. Like, I want to see this team just do everything ever, like for the rest of the time. You know,
Joe, we popped around a lot. Do you have any other thoughts there? Cool. I love this movie. I don't think it's a surprise at all. If I was a little kid, this would be my favorite movie of all time. Incredible. It would be my entire personality. For all the things that you said, it's just pure. You want to hang out with you. You were talking about the producers and writers and stuff. I want to hang out with the turtles. I want to be with these boys. Like, they are so authentically teenagers in a way we simply have never seen. Not
Donnie's
a single iteration of this, man. Like, I have read countless Ninja Turtle comics. I have watched all of the shows. They have never done this. And in one movie, they are all more believable than I've ever seen them. I've been obsessed with turtles since I was a little kid. I think Cool Gray's about to bring in the toys I got. It's been a tradition since we were little that anytime a new iteration of Turtles comes out, I buy me, Kevin, and Cool Greg our toys of Leo,
that.
Mikey, and Donson. When these came out, I'm like, I gotta get it. And there's some of the just dopest designs, you know? Like, I feel like the one of the things that I loved the most about the Michael Bay Turtles movies, I hated their face and I hated that, but I love that they kind of pushed the idea of the turtles each have their personality with them, like Mikey with the puka shell necklace, and Leo's a little bit more traditional, like ninja samurai
Johnny
stuff
Knoxville
going on.
Stunts.
and then we have Donatello was like teched out and had all the gear and stuff. I liked that. I feel like this is the right meeting in the middle of it, though. The like more cartoony version that doesn't take it too seriously. I love that they have their letters on their belts, like the 80s cartoon. Like, I just feel like it found the right inspiration from all the best Turtles have had to offer, but wrapped in an authentic, these are just boys hanging out. Yeah. And like, that's why I love Ninja Turtles. That's why we connected with it. It's this brotherhood and them filming each other doing dumb shit, and like the ninjas or the Sai getting thrown and getting into Donnie and him screaming like, we've been there. Literally, like, Kevin threw a blow dart one time and it went into Cool Greg's leg and he screamed. It was like, I felt like I was watching our childhood, and like, they just succeeded so much in that. But
where did child Kevin get a blow dart?
You know,
you don't need to ask. Yeah, yeah.
But what I love beyond all of that is that I don't think it was just a movie for me. I feel like for all the times we weren't laughing or whatever, this movie did something that I was like, oh my God, like, I'm getting old in the best ways. They make a reference to like, oh, that's on some Gru Megamind type shit. And I'm like, damn, they're now referencing villains in animated movies that weren't made for us,
right,
that weren't our generation. So the idea of that's some bad guy shit, they're not saying the bad guys we know. That they're not saying Darth Vader. They're not saying like the most obvious iconic things to us. There's a new generation that has other touchstones and other references. And I feel like this movie kind of knocked it out of the park in finding the balance between us getting the jokes, but then also kids getting the jokes. I feel like the Guy Fieri line is the one thing that made me go, I don't like this in the whole movie. And like, even then,
and that's not because of the recent like Trump stuff where like Guy Fieri was like shaking his hand.
No,
I know what you mean though. It's like the one line where like, that one feels a little bit forced.
That didn't add up with the scene and the rest of the references you're making here. But that's my criticism of this movie. Otherwise, I'm like, damn, they really nailed it. I guess the other thing is, because
I wish Donnie was smaller than Mike.
Donnie's
voice, he sounds like the most childish out of all of them.
Yeah.
The most childlike. He has a very, very, a much higher pitched voice than all the other boys. And I feel like I wish he was like a little, or I just wish Mikey wasn't as small as he was. That felt like a little bit weird, but that's like such a stupid thing.
But I mean, you know, Nick was talking a lot about the mutants, the mayhem element of this, of how many characters there were with voices that we know. I love that the Turtles are these kids, and it made it feel so much more authentic than we've ever seen. But like, I fucking love these guys. Like, their voices were so good. It was so well realized, the performances of each of them, where you immediately get the identity of Leo, Donnie, Raph, and Mikey. Like, boom, this is who they are. This is how they work together. And it didn't fall back on the trite stuff we've seen movie after movie after movie of their dynamics. It felt fresh. You know, it didn't feel like the same old, well, they're going to pair off, they're going to pair off, they're going to have some drama. It's like, it just worked. And watching the trailers, I was a little worried about the amount of characters overall. Of like, how are they going to balance all of these mutants being introduced, not having Shredder, also new takes on all these characters. And I can't believe how many characters had an arc in this movie that was completed. You look at April, you look at Splinter, all of them felt realized themselves in addition to the Turtles. The art style, like what Andy was saying, like the lighting on it, the drawing, the ugliness of it, the nastiness of it. That's Turtles, man. You look back to the original comics, they're not proportionate. Their face is all fucked up and like nothing really makes sense, and the humans are ugly. It's supposed to be an ugly world. There's ooze everywhere. Like, there's this nasty slime. They're in the sewers. Like, but this kind of made a magic to all of that, and I just really appreciated how much New York was a character. That's when Turtles shines the most. They straight up do the Spider-Man, you fuck with one of us, you fuck with all of us scene, and like all the different New York like occupations of the delivery guy getting to the taxi driver, getting to the crane operator. It's like, so man, good. Y'all really gave a shit about this. And one of my favorite scenes in the movie is the big fight scene where they're all fighting together, taking down all the different gangs around the city, and the way that they intercut it all. It's perfect. Like, each turtle gets their time to shine with their weapons and their personalities and stuff, but it just ends. It's a comedic beat.
Great
action beat, like character beat. It was a success all the way through, and it just builds up to the milking joke having the greatest payoff of all time. Splinter coming back, doing a fucking epic, I'm gonna use all the turtles' weapons in a fight scene. But before that, we get Jackie Chan Splinter in a fight scene that's like a Jackie Chan movie of using his environment around him. I'm like, man, y'all motherfuckers didn't need to go this hard. I'm obsessed with this movie. I saw it twice already. I'm going to watch it the third time. I really loved it. Nick, you look like you had something to say.
Yeah, I was just going to riff off the art style for a second. At first, when the movie started, I thought, I was like, I don't like this style. It is ugly. I think it was sort of a, dare I say, like, to draw a comparison with Spider-Verse. I'm like, I feel like Spider-Verse did a stylized version of this better. 5 minutes into the movie, I'm like, oh, they're going for a very, very, very specific tone. And that tone is about a group of people who live in the sewers, who feel like they're outsiders, who feel like they've been shunned by society, who feel like if they go into society, that it will be to the detriment of their health, maybe even their death. And that is a very hard vibe to nail, and they nailed it, and they somehow nailed it to a point where I want more of that world. It's very hard for me to describe what I'm feeling, but I think the closest analog or the closest thing I could say is, like, it makes me nostalgic for the simpler time of weird ass movies that came out in the 80s. Those movies that are guilty pleasure movies that I go back and I watch, not because they're of the merit of like all of the special effects and stuff, but just because the world they created makes me want to be a part of that. I see some of myself in there, right? I sympathize with the characters. I feel what they want to feel. I want to see more of this world. And I think the art style really went to back that up. And I can't tell you enough how happy I am to be sitting there 30 minutes in being like, it's ugly on purpose. They fucking nailed it. This is the whole point of this movie, is that you're supposed to feel this way and sympathize with the turtles. And then when they get to go, you know, you get that pop of them coming into high school and everyone cheers for them. We're like, wow, this is a really special thing they did.
Yeah, and it's not only just the brush strokes and everything, but when I'm talking unconventional, like I'm reminded of the unattractiveness of characters in Courage the Cowardly Dog or All Real Monsters. You know, like that's the vibe that I got from this
movie. But I feel also like Barrett put it in succinctly, perfectly. He was like, this reminds me of like Garbage Pail Kids. I don't know if you guys were ever fans of Garbage Pail Kids growing up, but I sure was. And I remember distinctly my mom looking at these cards being like, what do you see in this? And I'm like, you don't get it, Mom.
I don't
like,
know. I don't know either.
I just vibe with this. This just speaks to me on a level that nothing else does. And so and this movie is exactly that. It just, you look at it, you're in it. It speaks to you on a level where you're like, maybe people aren't going to get this, but I do, and it's for me.
Yeah. You know? Real quick, Nick, you talking about weird worlds that just like make sense in the weirdest way. I was telling Andy and Joe, I watched Pee-wee's Big Adventure last night for the first time.
You've never seen it?
In my adult life.
Oh, okay.
I loved it when I was little. Oh, my God. You need to watch it tonight, man. All right, Paul Rubens.
I know. All right, Paul. I mean, I've watched Pee-wee's Big Adventure multiple times throughout the years. It is a twisted, twisted
vibe. It's so
weird. The thing that people don't remember about, I don't know if you know too much about Paul Rubens, but like he came from like, I want to say Groundlings or Second City with Phil Hartman. Pee-wee came out of a late night hardcore, like perverted fucking thing that someone just decided to put on kids television on Saturday morning.
It was Gia's first time watching the movie, and it was so funny. I was like, this movie terrified me as a kid. Like, there's a moment that is gonna like fucking change you, whatever. And it's Large Marge, right?
Of course.
The movie starts, and within 5 minutes, Gia's like, oh yeah, no, this is terrifying. And I was like, what? And she's like, twisted. Just Pee-wee to her. She thought he was the terrifying part. I'm like, man, to be a woman, such a different experience out there. But anyways, we're going to talk more about teenage. Oh, last thing I want to say, just review-wise, is because I know there's going to be a lot of comparisons to Spider-Verse because of the art style, because of the teams behind it in some way, whatever, all of that. Spider-Verse being one of my favorite things of all time, I actually think that they're so different, but I do think that Mutant Mayhem does for the Turtles franchise what Spider-Verse did to the Spider-Man franchise, which is take something we know so damn well and give such a fresh take from every perspective, from production all the way to the tried and true, and delivered something we wanted, but in such a brand new, fresh way that I don't think that they're necessarily one-to-one comparable, like saying which is better than which. Spider-Verse is better. That doesn't fucking matter. Like, that's not the point. This is a perfect Turtles movie.
But an argument can be made. I enjoyed this.
Great.
Like, Spider-Verse, a bigger accomplishment across the board. But when I think about how, I guess to your point, when I think about like how the first Spider-Verse or Into Spider-Verse, no, what was the first one?
Into
the Spider-Verse, how that kind of reinvented the series, to your point, this does that for me, but on a level that I've never really had that touchstone for Spider-Man. He's always been a character that I love, but like TMN, like Turtles were like my jam back in the day. And this hit on a level where I was like, somebody who made this movie felt like me when I was a kid playing with these Turtles. and they fucking get it. And they got it. And that's all I'll say on that subject.
Amen, dude. Amen. So we're going to take a real quick break. If you're on patreon.com/kindoffunny, you don't need to hear these ads. But for everyone else, here's a word from our sponsors.
This is the plot for Ninja Turtles. Not anything rhymes with Ninja Turtles. I didn't have a lot of time for rehearsal. Red is for Raphael. Donnie's purple.
I lost myself on the guitar. Sorry.
You also felt like you got a little too high in your voice. You ran out of breath. Somewhere.
I totally ran out. I was supposed to start way low. I was supposed to. Way
this is on. The plot for Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, I was supposed to stay down the whole time.
Can I ask you guys a quick question before we start the plot? Does it break anyone else's brain that Tim doesn't buy a Raph toy?
Well, then what would they do with Raph?
We got an anti-red agenda in this household. Now, real talk, they sold this in a 4-pack. Raph's in my drawer.
Okay. Because I was like, if you need to slide another friend.
Yeah. You want to be our Raph?
I'll be Raph.
I'm sure Kevin will be thrilled about that. Yeah.
We're going to go. We just saw this movie last night, of course, ladies and gentlemen. We saw it in theater, so we are going to go off the good old-fashioned dome of helping out with Wikipedia is going to help us out on this one a little bit. But we start 15 years ago. Cynthia
Utron. Now, I got to stop with the Tim Geddes nerd shit straight off the rip on this one. Utram are the alien creatures like Krang, that most people know from the 80s.
The brain.
Cartoon.
Right.
That would go in the big mechanoid thing. But like in every iteration of Turtles, they're kind of like the actual big bad guy. And like the Technodrome and all that stuff is like because of them. And they come from Dimension X and all that stuff. But the character here, as far as I know, is an original character. It might be based on somebody before, but her outfit is completely inspired by the Krang outfit.
Yeah, the robot.
They Doc Ocker. Exactly. It's like, yeah, like the color she's wearing, the visor she has, and all of that. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. And I didn't recognize that until my second viewing of the movie. Like, I heard the name, but I was like, oh my God, they did this, which is so sick.
Very cool. Of course, she works for the Sinister Technocosmic Research Institute, or TCRI. That's from the original movie too, right? Was that
TCRI?
Yeah, TCRI has been the thing, right?
Yeah, it is.
Cool. Hunts down rogue scientist Baxter Stockman, who has created a mutagen to form his own mutant animal family, starting with a housefly. And this is where
Carlos Esposito, baby.
I mean, come on. Incredible.
King of the baddies.
This is where I'm like, okay, this movie's got a little something, right? Because we're hunting down Baxter Stockman, not a cookie cutter sort of just bad guy. He's like, I've always wanted to have a little family, and you're going to start. I've always felt like an outsider. I've always wanted a family, and I'm going to start with you. And it's like, oh, okay. We got a couple of dimensions to this. This is interesting.
And my God, can I just say, Joey specifically, mm-hmm. I love this fat little fly. It's just moose. This thing. But I love the little baby super fly. Hilarious.
So cute.
We get introduced to the
team. Which is a weird thing to say about a fly.
I know.
We get introduced to the team, the TCRI team, who are these big thugs. I love the way their outfits are designed. It reminds me, I keep coming back to this, but the Fifth Element, the cops in Fifth Element that had the big bulky things and like the big helmets that kind of look like, how do you get through doors without slamming into the door?
For me, it was the dude's neck lights.
Yeah.
That shined up on his face, and just kind of seeing the way, getting an early glimpse at how they play with lighting in this world where, you know, metal and aluminum and textures like that aren't really going to operate in ways that we know them to operate in like other animated films. Like how are they going to play with lighting here, and how is that going to affect the world? And it was just cool, kind of just seeing that little pink light. And the pink light is cool as hell.
The pink light's always cool.
Because they love playing with the pink and the greens later on, and it just looks so sick.
For me, it was the juxtaposition of the big dudes with the tiny guns. I just love that. I don't know why I love that so much, but like they're cool, well-designed guns, but it's just like this little, like, you know, it just, it's a fun look. Anyway, they raid Baxter's I guess basement is what you'd call it. And unfortunately, mutagen gets away. It falls into the sewers. And that is where we can just understand, like, this is where the turtles come from. I don't know if we actually see the turtles at this point.
That was the one thing.
I think we cut to the present, right?
Yeah. It's in this moment that I'm like, Joe, how come nobody was, like, really worried about the one gigantic, or, like, the super obvious glowing green thing.
Like, they're just like kind of kicking the vial around. It's like okay.
Who cares about this thing? It's like
this mysterious glowing thing can't possibly be bad.
Looked like a very important thing that they needed to grab.
We cut to present day, 15 years later.
Which is why I'm drinking this green apple soda, by the way.
That's great.
Does it look like it's lit up?
It does look like the ooze.
Ooze. Kind of. Ooze. Ooze. Yeah, it's ooze.
We meet our four turtles here, and instantly you love them. They do a great job. The voice actors do a great job of making them very distinctive. The character designs of them are great. I love that Donatello's wearing glasses. I love that we have the old school look of them. The way their shells move. The front pads where they kind of move independently of each other, I thought was really, really cool. And just, you know, obviously it's the magic of movie making. Sometimes you miss, sometimes you hit, but just having four actors that have great chemistry with each other, and you just, it's such a hard thing to cultivate, but you're instantly like, I want to hang out with these people. This is fun.
I think right off the bat, we get a glimpse at them and they are in their... They're in the look that we're used to from the comics where they have no pupils or irises. It's all just white eyes, like very Deadpool looking.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, I didn't know they were going for this style. And it was just them being ultra super self-serious. Yeah. And then they start, and then immediately that's taken away from us. And we see how they actually look in real life. And they're just goofing around. They're making fun of Leo because he's doing the Batman voice. And then we got to make sure to get the family size of nacho cheese. He underlined it twice. It seems very important.
Yeah,
the lines here, there's so many killer, like what Tim says, the chip damage jokes of just like, here's a line. You may not have heard that the first time. You might hear it the third time when you watch it. But there's a lot of little great lines of like, high impact, you know?
And I feel like this is the type of movie that it's going to be so rewatchable and like, hey, just focus on just Mikey or just Donnie. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so much going out there that's just great. And I really loved the pacing of this movie, having this scene here of them running the classic Turtles, like, parkour through New York. Like, they do all the same shots that they always
do.
The
moon at their back.
All of that, right? And, like, the references to, like, the Laird, Eastman and Laird, like, the creators of it, like, on the hotels. It's just classic Turtle shit. We get the pose of them on the rooftop, and it's all badass. I thought this was going to be they learned how to be turtles towards the end of the movie, let's go fuck them up moment. I liked that it was in the beginning, and it was kind of like, let's just get that out of the way. They're just fucking teens having fun, you know? Yeah. They're going to learn and figure it out, but it's not going to culminate in this, like, we're fucking badass way.
Big moment where they fight as a team. Here, of course, they're we see them do all the errands. We see them, like, sneaking around the convenience stores, all that stuff. This is all super fun. And then they got to go home, and Leo's like, hey, we got to get home. We told Splinter we'd get home right away, and he's not dumb. He's going to understand if we're out for 3 hours trying to get a party-sized bag of Cool Ranch Doritos or whatever it is. But all of his brothers talk them into going to a movie in the park because, of course, they are teens, and they want to be a part of the world above them, right? Very much like the Little Mermaid. They want to. Mm-hmm. They see all the lights.
Where the people are.
They want to be where the people are. And so he gets talked into going to a movie in the park. That movie, of course, is the one and only Ferris Bueller's Day Off, which is not a recreation of the movie.
No,
they just composited the scene with the parade and Twist and Shout in. Which I fucking popped for because I was like, okay, well, obviously I think Seth Rogen's probably my age, which I try not to think about because he's vastly more successful than me. but obviously, if you grew up in the 80s, you know, Ferris Bueller is an icon and he's a person that everyone loves. And that spurs the conversation of like, we want to be loved. We want, you know,
Bueller, you're
we'd like to
hero.
Be accepted. Ferris Bueller, you're my hero. But they can't, of course, because they are turtles. And that is reinforced when they go back home and Splinter is waiting up for them. And Splinter is Jackie Chan. And my dumb brain did not realize Jackie Chan was in this movie. And the first thing he says made me laugh so fucking hard. This entire monologue he goes on where they're like, we don't need to hear why we can't be a part of it again. He goes, well, I'm gonna tell you anyway. 15 years ago I found you and I was a rat and everything tried to kill me, and you were the first things that didn't try to kill me, and I'm a little bit older than you, so I aged more, and that makes sense, and don't question it.
Oh my god. It is a laugh out loud moment.
It's just because Jackie is so good at this.
I made a friend with a cockroach. I ate him.
I made a friend with a cockroach. I ate him. Oh man. Of course he's like, you know, I've been where you guys are at. I tried to take us up to the world. I thought they'd accept us, and one day we went into Times Square and everyone tried to kill us, and it was not great. And I realized that I had to learn how to defend us and teach you guys how to defend yourself if you were going to encounter the world and again. And I did that by, how'd they do it, Tim?
80s movie montage. I just love that it's just a bunch of like the hip hop keto like videos and stuff and just random scenes from karate movies and
random like YouTube videos.
Yeah, like, I love there's live action footage. Like yeah. All of this was just so great. And like the lead in scene in Times Square where they get up and like the camera kind of treats it like this like wonderful magic moment where it's like going around them and all the little turtle boys are like looking
it's so
up.
Cute.
And it's just so damn pitch perfect. And it just addresses all the issues Nick has
yeah,
had.
Nick, how do you feel about this version?
I mean, it's hilarious.
Well, this
you can get away with anything if it's hilarious and creative.
No, but this makes a lot more sense because this is mutated Splinter learning after videos. When before it was a normal rat learning after videos. it was a normal rat just watching karate. And so that was the big issue that Nick had of like, how does this normal rat, why is he learning karate from like yeah. humans?
But I tell you what, we get a pet rat, we put him on the table, and we just let him watch.
He learn how to podcast.
He learns how to podcast.
You can take him to jujitsu class.
Yeah, I'll take him to jujitsu. He can roll around with me for a little bit. This was hilarious.
And can we again, also talk, Nick, about Splinter's? Like, not only was there the line of like, I was older, so I turned into a slightly bigger rat. Like that being so funny, but to see Splinter throughout the ages, and he just straight up looks like a fucking like 70s. Dude,
yeah,
like
yeah.
he's like modeled after one of the creators of Turtles, which is super fun. But like with the haircut and stuff, they nailed it. Like this is like the most inspired Splinter ever.
So incredibly funny. Love all this. This is a great setup. Obviously, we see them. But what I also like about this is this: they're unproven, and they don't shy away from that. We're not starting with the Turtles. The Turtles have never been in a fight before, as we're about to see. And so, yes, they learned all these things, and yes, they're super agile because they are mutants, and they have these quote-unquote like kind of superpowers things. But in my brain, I'm like, well, they don't know how to fight. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. We're about to see that right now. Of course, as they go on another spy run, they're screwing around with YouTube videos, throwing stars at a watermelon that looks like Mikey's head, and one of them goes awry, and what does it do? It hits April O'Neil right in the head, knocks her off her scooter. She starts yelling at them. This is, what's the actress's name?
Ayo Edebiri.
Yeah, phenomenal. She should be in everything.
She has a new movie coming out later this year that's supposed to be like the girl version of Superbad, and I'm very excited for it.
Awesome.
It's called Bottoms, and it's Rachel Zanet, who's in... She's in Bodies. Did I see either of you?
Yes.
She's the girl that's dating Lee Pace. Anyways.
Perfect.
Oh my God, she was in
the two
icon.
Of them together are very, very funny. The they idol. Had like a podcast or did some like sketch comedy stuff together.
Watch everyone, your daily reminder, watch The Bear seasons 1 and 2. It's phenomenal. Yes. She starts screaming at them. I love her. I just like her delivery of things. It's very, and that's
she
the thing.
She plays video games too. Do we know this?
Does she?
They posted Elysium. Like a,
Andy,
yeah,
get on it.
An IGN thing where she was talking about like her favorite games and it's Disco Elysium, which is like such a random thing to pick, but she's
maybe
a real
she's
one.
Just super into like socialism and communism. Maybe it's less about the game, the gaming.
It was that an Animal Crossing. So,
oh, okay. Yeah.
While she's arguing with them, of course, somebody steals their scooter, and they're like, "Wait, we got to get this back. We've screwed this up. We got to go take these people down." This is the first time they've thought about potentially going in and being heroes. They do. They go into it, run in, and there's like 30 dudes in there. And they're all big. And they're like, we bit off more than we could chew on this. But this kicks off our first major fight scene of the movie.
I
and
love
great.
That they get in there, and there's a lot of guys. Like, just the way they talk about it, it's like the way we would talk about it. There's a lot of guys there, you know?
Yeah.
And the way that they show them all, and there's a bunch of unique things. I haven't heard Nick laugh this loud in the theater in so long, but when there was the one bald dude and then two more bald dudes popped out from behind him.
It was such good comedy, man.
It is. That was like top three moments, that and the two Andes from
Hot Fuzz.
From Hot Fuzz.
The face comes back in frame.
I mean, I'm a simple idiot, right? I'm a sucker for sight gags like
that.
I loved this. I loved the quick when they're fighting and he punches the guy through the car. They go through one of the cars and the radio pops on for a second and you hear the Vanilla Ice song.
Yeah.
That was a fun little reference. Like, we get it, guys. There's more to this. They end up winning, and of course April comes in and is totally trying to just get her scooter back. She's like, I forget how she phrased it, but she's like, I'm a non-aggressive, non-something, like, I'm not looking at your faces, I just want my scooter back, I really need it. And of course, everyone's had their asses beat, and the turtles are trying to hide behind engine blocks and whatnot. They reveal themselves to her. She freaks out for a second, thinking that they're Times Square mascots. They are not. That is your actual skin. And I forget how they endear themselves to her, but at a certain point,
sort of go get pizza.
Oh, that's right. That's what it is. And she's like, okay, cool. Cut two. They're giving her life story. This is who we are. That's happened. All this stuff, yada, yada, yada. And she goes, I want to write about all of this. I want to be a reporter.
No, but I mean, there was also that very, very good line of not only just offering, you know, hey, how do we tell you that, you know, we're trying to be non-aggressive, we're trying to show you that we're not a threat. How do you feel about pizza? And she says, how do you feel about pepperoni? And he goes, I don't know. I didn't think we'd get this far in the conversation. I didn't know if we'd get this far. This is a great little cute moment. You know?
Yeah, there was another moment in there too where, it's earlier where he's like, they're talking and he's like, yeah, our dad, who was definitely not a giant rat.
Kind of feel like he's a rat. Kind of feel like he's a
rat. Yeah, when you say it like that. Of course, we move right along. This is where we get introduced to Superfly. Someone named Superfly is stealing all these components. We're not quite sure why. These scenes are awesome. Him lifting the van is terrifying, and then killing people that saw his face. I'm like, holy shit, this is going to be really, really cool. Had the Superfly toy, never was my favorite. So you really want to go back and look at it.
A real character.
It was Baxter Stock. Right? Oh, yes. Baxter. Again,
transformed into
very flying. Wise calls about playing with what we know, but like giving it us in a way that we're like, this just works better. Let's not question it. Again, making April more contemporary to them. Great call. We've seen that before, but I just feel like they did a really good job of what matters about April O'Neil. She's a journalist. Cool. That doesn't mean she needs to be a 34-year-old news reporter.
Right.
You know, it's like she can be working her way up, and I feel it just makes everything make a little bit more sense for, especially if you're going to have potential love connections between the turtles and her, which they always flirt with that concept. And, you know, I don't love it being Leo. Doesn't feel right. Doesn't feel authentic to me.
It's supposed to be Raph.
But was it, or, I mean, they played Mickey, a bunch of different ways, but Donnie's usually the one that it ends up being a thing.
Okay.
But, you know, I'll live with it. Guys,
I like it. I think obviously Leo having his first crush, the guy's making fun of him the entire time for, because he's so freaking awkward trying to leave her a message, trying to give her the phone number, all that stuff. That's really, really good. Like that, I love that they made her their age.
I was very surprised to hear the Riz references. I was like, wow, like did they go back and record newer lines? Like, because that Riz is not a super new concept, it's rather like, I'd say like within the last year, maybe.
Yeah,
it's possible.
Yeah,
Riz being short for charisma.
Ah, got it.
If you could talk to, if you can, you know, drop spit game and, you know, flirt with people correctly, you have Riz.
Ah, okay.
So and Riz kind of just, I saw it pop up on TikTok like maybe a year or so ago. So I was kind of surprised to see it, because usually what happens, you in these movies come out, Joe, and you might hear a TikTok song from like 3 years ago, and you're like, okay, this is a very dated thing that is not cool anymore.
I feel like it's this movie that has done a good job with that, and then it's the Summer I Turned Pretty. I'm like, how are you using like songs that are big right now?
Yeah.
How is this possible? How did you have the foresight? And I
very cool.
You just have good people that are working on stuff.
It's either that or everything's so cheaply made, it was produced yesterday.
I just shot it a day ago. Speaking a bit about like the writing, kind of like speaking to us and to the kids, the music in this movie was so good. Like the licensed stuff was so good. But I love the authentic, it's like 90s New York hip hop stuff. So they leaned in so hard to that. Like having Annie Up come back, not once, but twice in this, felt so damn good. We get Shimmy Shimmy Ya from Old Dirty Bastard,
ODB,
which is just like so inappropriate.
So good.
So inappropriate for this movie. It was more of an instrumental version, which I was like, all right, but it's like, if you know the lyrics to that song, you can't get much nastier than that. Yeah. So I just appreciated that. Obviously, Can I Kick It, Tribe Called Quest, like there was so much good stuff there. But then besides the hip hop shit, every other licensed song was fucking perfect and not the most overdone shit that we've had a million times.
You thought you were going to hear Hero?
No, there was no Hero, but instead we got the hey,
We're Not Blondes. Yeah.
Like, which is just so perfect. Like, I feel like that's the right level of song that you want
here. What was the 80s montage music?
Can I Kick It? No.
No, that one... Semi overdone, but I'll give it to them there. What was that?
Alex in the chat says No Diggity.
There was No Diggity, yeah. But I'll have to look at this list in a second, a little deeper for that. But Natasha Bedingfield.
Oh my gosh!
Unwritten during the throw up scene.
So funny.
It's just eras, babe.
What was this? What was the song when it was doing that cool shot where it was like profile and they were kicking everyone's ass? We're about to come up to that. The montage.
Annie Up, I think.
Was Annie? Okay.
Yeah, which is perfect.
Awesome.
Oh, but then also Superfly. His introduction being like Superfly, being a more modern song, was just like, this is just great, man. Just such a good eclectic mix of music.
Yeah, here. I mean, yeah, I think No Diggity was in the montage when they were fighting all the dudes throughout all the rooms.
Yeah, oh, sorry. That scene was No Diggity.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I was talking about like the when they're watching the 80s, because that's where I expected to hear Hero. Yeah. And it's another very similar workout kind of 80s
Karate Kid type thing, but
yeah.
It's not on this list. I don't know why.
Tim, we'll keep looking for that. We'll keep going along with the plot. Of course, a plan is hatched now because Splinter's like, you guys are just barred for. I think maybe we skipped forward of them already doing the being grounded for a month. Doesn't matter. Splinter's like, you can't go out there. You guys know this. I want to give you guys a surprise party and do all this stuff and show you what the real world is. But you can't really go out there. Of course, at this point, they've hatched a plan with April O'Neil. She goes to a place called Eastman High School.
Just when they leave her in the sewer, too. And they're like, we gotta go.
I think so, yeah.
I just loved that because she was like, well, now I'm just here. I'm stuck here.
There's a cockroach sucking on a turd.
I'm looking at that. Cool. The plan, of course, is if she is a dork. She's called Puke Girl because she wanted to be cool. She wanted to do the morning announcements, and she ended up puking all over herself, and now she's Puke Girl. She wants to do something to get back into the good graces of her fellow high schoolers, and that is basically writing a story that people all love. Of course, her story is the Turtles. They segue. They say, what if we were to capture the Superfly person? We'll launch a plan. We'll figure it out. She takes them to high school. That's where they see the Puke Girl thing, all that jazz. The idea, of course, being that the boys are like, we'll be heroes, and then – everyone will bust Superfly, everyone will love us, and we'll get to go to high school and we'll be accepted. And this sounds fantastic. So the plan is to they got to go through these five groups of the big baddies in the city. One is Normal Nate, which I think might be the funniest thing.
All of Snowback Mike's friends.
Yep.
Straight up.
Drew literally. Yeah. They beat all of them until they eventually get up to, I forget who the last person was. It wasn't Normal Nate. It was... Toupee Tom, yeah. Who's like, hey, we got a shipment happening tonight. If you guys go steal that, like Superfly will be there. You'll meet him, and that'll be perfect. So that's what they do. They wait for Superfly and the gang, and when they pull up, they are not human. They are all mutants, and we get introduced to the rest of the cast of this film, not the least of which are Bebop and Rocksteady, played by Seth Rogen and John Cena. You got Rose Byrne as, I forget the character's name.
Leatherhead.
We've already seen, I'll go through it right now. Paul Rudd as Mondo Gecko, Hannibal Buress as Genghis Frog, and then the one, Post Malone,
yeah,
I think it was perfect. Hannibal Buress, sometimes you want to just pepper it a little bit, he's perfect.
As I'm watching it, I also thought to myself, man, I wish we had JB Smoove in here somewhere.
He's like, a motherfucker, everything's a motherfucker.
It would have just been a great addition somewhere.
And then, of course, the one and only Ice Cube coming in as Superfly. And I did not realize Ice Cube was in this movie, of course, because I did not pay attention to anything. I was like, fuck, yes, this just put the pin in the 100% that I know right now.
And I laughed every time Ice Cube got mad at, you know, the crew or got mad at Post Malone for always just singing. Just like, just introduce yourself, quit, just be normal. You know, like anytime that would happen, man, they just had such a good way of approaching humor in this movie.
But like, just think about how much was introduced in the last 5 minutes here. And we are in that action scene. It's an all timer, man. Like, I feel like they did such a good job of making New York feel totally understood. The crime families all of that. It didn't need much. It was just like cool, interesting action that like is backed up by dope music, interesting camera movements, character moments. All of that was so good. Going right into, here's the introduction. We're going to go through the lineup. Lineup scenes are always fun, but they can come off kind of corny or kind of like, eh, that felt forced. This just felt effortless, man. Like, we are introduced to like 13 characters that all of them were like, I kind of want more from you. Like, their one-liner intros were just like so well done.
Wait, who is this actor? Natasha Demetrio. She's the one that played the bat, right?
I saw that in the IMDb and I did not recognize
her. She's from What We Do in the Shadows.
Okay. I thought that was Rose Byrne, but I was like, wow, she had a really thick accent that Rose doesn't normally have.
No, Rose Byrne was also in this. Rose Byrne was the Australian leatherhead, yeah.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. They all bro out here. They're like, holy crap, we didn't know there was more mutants. Superfly's like, I'll accept you guys into the group. You guys seem pretty cool. They don't know his plan, of course, at this point, but they decide to all go to the bowling alley to go and hang out, during which they learn that Superfly's like, you know, I had to save all my brothers and sisters. We tried coming out to the world and telling them who we were, and they all wanted to kill us. So now instead, we're just going to use this. He's like, I have a brain for science just like my father. I'm taking all this equipment that I took from the TCRI, and we are going to make this big mutant ray, and we're going to turn all the humans, we're going to kill all the humans and turn all the other things into mutants, and it's going to be a mutant world, run world, to which April's like, you guys can stop this at any time. And I love all the moments where they like admit to collusion or to being a part of this. She's like, I'll just edit that out.
Yeah.
All that stuff's great. Of course, they realize very late in the game that they can't let this happen, as they're trying to go back to the evil hideout with the last piece of tech that they need. They're all riding in the back of the car with Mondo and all this stuff. We get a little humor about Donnie's stick.
Perfect.
It's like, all I get is a stick. And he's like, if only we had something long and like strong that we could just slide it. And he goes, like a stick. They jam the brakes. Everyone goes flying. This starts going, of course.
With the great comedic beat of they're all singing to What's Going On, and then as they're flying out, you see Mondo Gecko, or maybe it's...
Yeah, it's Mondo Gecko.
Well, yeah, and he goes, What's Going On? That's a great moment. Yeah,
another great comedic beat is the stick, the 1-2-3 punch of it, of like the stick being referenced being a joke, that if only we had a stick, and then he'd be like, my stick's being used against me!
That's so incredible.
I will say, one of my criticisms... needed like 15-20% less of the milking.
Really?
I wanted it to be one of those moments that we've seen expertly done in other movies where it's brought up once or twice and then you get the payoff and you're like, oh my god, they brought that back in the funniest way possible. But it was just like always, it was, I thought it was like kind of like overdone.
It was
but,
the goats.
But yeah, exactly. But I will say that it was still hilarious when Jackie Chan sees that the machine is called.
I told you.
Like, that shit was hilarious. And that was, like, a really funny kind of reveal or whatever. That's, like, the name of the actual machine. But I could have done a little bit less with the milk and stuff.
Of course, this whole scene ends with them getting arrested and Superfly making off with the last piece of tech that he needs. They are put in the milking machine by Maya Rudolph's character. And it's hilarious.
The BTS song. Singing, oh. should we all sing the song for you? Yeah, and trying to sing the lyrics.
Smooth
and Donnie,
butter, smooth like butter.
And Donnie's like, you don't even know the lyrics. Like, it's just like all the line deliveries are so like just natural, and I freaking love it.
I also really liked that at least like I wasn't at least familiar with any of those voice actors, so it felt so much like their characters because you're not getting distracted, being like, oh, it's actually Paul Rudd, yeah. Oh, it's actually Ice Cube and stuff like that. So I think they did a good job. I'm sure they've been in things that we just don't know about. So
and undercover. You don't even know the lyrics. He just seems so dejected by that moment.
They're also a little bit disappointed with April because they feel like she left them behind. Of course, she did not. She goes down to the sewers and goes to Master Splinter and says, hey, they're in trouble. So Splinter comes in to save the day. At the end, we get a fun action sequence that I think Tim has a piece of trivia for.
Oh, just this was the thing that it was inspired by Jackie Chan movies. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of very specific things, moments from movies, of, like the way that he is animated is based on Jackie Chan, like using rolling chairs and like just using the shelves and all that stuff. But combined with being a giant rat that can crawl on walls and shit. But, you know, Jackie Chan's always kind of fucking
loved it,
doing all that stuff. But they did a very faithful job of, like, letting him be Jackie Chan before then being like, him getting all the fucking weapons. And there's just the scene of him, like being like, let's fucking go. And then the music plays again. That the song was Push It to the Limit.
Yeah.
That plays
it to the limit. That's the 80s thing that I was like, initially thinking it was going to be I Need a Hero when those synth drums kind of started.
Pretty close.
I loved the original track by Reznor and Ross of, like, it played throughout the movie. It was just like this pumping kind of song with like synth. Weird kind of like synth bass over it. Like, I loved that.
It's
shit.
Inspired by the TMNT NES game.
Soundtrack. Oh, okay.
And, which is just so freaking good.
That song was so cool. Anytime that I played, I was like, dude, this is a fucking bop, dude. Like, I loved hearing that.
From here, of course, they got to go over to the old shed to fight Superfly at this point. They confront them. And they tell the entire group, like, hey, you guys, kind of what you're doing is kind of messed up. Like, you don't have to kill everyone. And one by one, they're like, yeah, we didn't want to do that either. We just didn't have another option. Like, there was no other option for us. Now that we do have another option, they're like, you guys come live with us in the sewers. It's like, what's the Wi-Fi situation down there? Is it a good situation?
This is a cool kind of character turn. I'm just so used to Bebop and Rocksteady just being bad guys. So that was kind of neat to see everybody. Now, what does that do for the future movies? That's going to be really interesting to see.
Well, they don't have a leader yet, you know? They don't have somebody leading them astray in a way.
We'll see. No future spoilers, Andy. Stay in your chair. They beat Superfly, but not before pushing him and this massive tank of the cool gun ray with all the mutation, the ooze, into the water. Of course, this is that was just phase one of Superfly. Phase two is him as a massive, massive monster that's... I'm not sure how the horses came into play, truth be told, because everything else was like crustacean-based. And then
Horsefly?
What's that? Oh, my God. Is that why?
That's my guess.
Genius.
Well, then he eventually also walked into the zoo. So, came out of the river or whatever, the ocean, and then walked into a zoo, and then it got even worse.
Got different.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
I did love the line, though. I think it was Paul Rudd, Manu Gecko, just being like, so it goes in the ocean. Does that mean that all things in the ocean are going to turn into mutants? That would make sense. And then you just come out of a giant whale. It's like,
I want this toy. Incredible. Incredible.
Horribly disgusting.
Horrifying. Eyes everywhere, horses as legs. The horses, great beats of comedy. The horses are like wide eyed, like, how do we get out of this? Like, what the hell just happened to us?
I don't even need that horse.
do zoos have horses?
No.
Fuck, that's a good
But I mean, theoretically, Central Park probably has an equestrian thing. Who knows? I don't know. Whatever. This is a movie about Ninja Turtles. We're going to be okay.
A lot of horses in movies this summer. Who would have thought?
Big horse summer.
April catches up to them and says, I think I have a way to beat him. I've got this gun that's on this scooter that I stole from the TCRI. It's got this anti-mutagen in it. We'll hit it, and it'll be fine. Of course, it just hits
one. Where do you want to meet? It's like, oh, we'll meet the leg of the thing we're all looking at. That makes sense.
Yeah,
cool.
That makes sense. Cool. They shoot it, and one horse pops out and runs away. And Ice Cube's like, I don't even need that horse anyway. I don't even care. I got so many things. So that's not going to work. Of course, he starts hurling cars at him, all this stuff. Meanwhile, all of the newscasters, not understanding what's going on, are like, mutants are attacking the city. They're led by these four turtles. April sees that and goes, no, I need to make this right. And she has to overcome her fear of puking. Can't mislead the public. I love that a light falls and the other anchor runs away, and she just pushes the light off the table, has that moment of panic, and then goes right into it, tells everyone, no, the Ninja Turtles are actually fighting this big thing. They're trying to save the city. They need your help. And then she immediately pukes on herself. And then the funniest thing in the whole movie to me is that the camera op just pushes in, just zooms in a little bit on it to frame out the puke. And I'm like, God, that's so genius, because that's what you would do in a professional studio environment. We would just leave the puke on the table for the rest of the time. There it is right there.
There it is. There it is.
Perfect, Barrett. Perfect.
Remember when I had some banana on the desk and Kevin got mad at me as if like the table's going to explode because I had some banana on the desk? He was so
mad. Potassium problem.
Yeah, well, potassium and plexiglass equals dynamite.
The old studio, Joe.
Everyone starts rallying. We get the crane moment. You mess with one of us, you mess with all of us.
Like we get the speech, right?
Yeah.
We get the Leo being a hero,
I'm
like
a leader.
Throwing it down. So we get April's kind of redemption arc, right, of doing this, but we also a second ago got Splinter's redemption arc of realizing that he is the same as Superfly, and like he needs to allow his kids to grow. And even though like he doesn't like humans, they like humans, which means he wants them to be cool with you. I'm like, yes, this is awesome, man.
We did gloss past that. So the whole emotional core of this movie and the theme is that at one point, actually, I think it might even be before this. Leo goes, "We were trying to be heroes to be accepted, and we're looking at that's wrong. We should just be heroes because we should be heroes."
And dude,
and let the chips fall where they may.
And that results in the like portal scene, for lack of a better term, of them all swimming to shore like with the other mutants, and they do the light up, the slow-mo walk, and April, like a fucking badass, just jumps off the scooter and grabs the gun.
The scooter tosses
the gun to Rap.
So like, fucking cool.
Yeah, this whole sequence is really, really damn cool. And the speech is great, and everybody, all the turtles' reactions to it are great. And I love Raph being like, "You're a leader, man. Like, listen to yourself, dude. Like, normally we talk shit to you, but you're a leader right now." Like, it's so, I don't know. It just brought, like, I had a smile on my face the whole time during this whole
thing. The Attack on Titan callback, too, because that was like a kind of similar to the milking joke that you were talking about, Andy. This was done like what you wanted with that, where it's like the Attack on Titan moment, such a small moment when they look at the lockers, and then one of like brought back as like a key, like, who is that? Donnie, like, figuring out of like, oh, their weakness is usually the back of their necks. And then it's like conveniently like this big gaping hole in the back of Superfly.
And
so good.
The funniest moment for me in this movie, and I've said that about 12 times already in this episode, is Raph or Mikey, you're really good at improv
jokes.
And he goes, "Yeah, you know, the weakness is usually on the back of their neck." And then Mikey goes, "Yes, and." Like, it's such a good fucking creative, clever line, man.
All of it. So good. I do want to go back to the line where he sees the drawing of Attack on Titan in the locker. I forget what he says, but it's something to the degree of, like, I don't even know who this person is, and, like, they're
I really like them more than
I like them more than like anyone else on the planet. I found my people, and that's going to be echoed later when everyone sort of, like, I think it was Donnie, is like, "I found my people," and it's just a bunch of guys on laptops. But we're not there yet. Of course, we have our "you mess with one of us, you mess with all of us" Crane moment, Spider-Man, all of the New Yorkers. Splinter gets knocked down. Someone comes up and goes, "Do you need help up?"
Awesome.
And Splinter's like, "Okay,
this
we're being
so awesome.
It's great. My boys need help. We got to get this thing over to them." We have the end game gauntlet moment where they're passing it. The choreography here, incredible. I don't know if you guys caught it, but at one point it goes up in the air and Leo cuts the bag. But just the bag, and the thing drops out of it so they can grab it and throw it in.
I love Raph with the size into the LED wall, swinging around with the using the size to like
that.
Project himself.
I hated that.
Oh, just because like paranoia. One day it's gonna happen. It just looked awesome. Like the choreography, you're right. It was like it would have been even more perfect for me if there was the create more tension with. This is the final drop of this thing into the hole. It just kind of happened.
It just happened.
And
I was
wanting like a boom, just slow-mo and like cuts to everybody, you know, the thing falling. Like, is it going to land? Is it not? You know.
What I liked about it, though, and I feel like the reason they didn't do that is the way that the camera followed the characters and was zipping around, it was straight up Attack on Titan. So I feel like they were like trying to go for the aesthetic of the way that when they fly around the Titans and stuff, which like they committed so hard to that I feel like doing that would have kind of like broken up the reference they were making. But
all the tag team stuff was phenomenal.
So goddamn sick, man. And like I've said this already, and we talked a little bit about it, but like the New York coming together to help our heroes can just simply fall flat. And we've seen it fall flat. And like, even when it works, sometimes it doesn't work. Like in Amazing Spider-Man with all the cranes lining up, like, on one hand, that's hilariously on the nose and awesome. On the other hand, it's like, this is the dumbest thing ever, and within 1 second, we're all making fun of it. But with this, having all the New Yorkers do such New York things to work with each other, with the mutants, with all the other mutants doing cool shit, Mondo Gecko, like, going into the water and shit.
Yeah,
like,
awesome.
It's just cool.
Skateboarding, like, getting boosted by the other skateboarders. Like, this
and
is so cool.
And the legitimately kind of scary moment of the
shells cracking.
The explosion, the shells bottles cracking, like the high-pitched sound going off, and them like walking around trying to find each other, and like Mondo Gecko's tail is off, and Mike is like, oh, Mike, don't worry, I'm back.
I think, I don't know if you guys talked about it or not, because we've glossed through a lot of things, but do we talk about the turtle van?
Oh, no, we didn't.
We got to talk about that. The fact that they turned it, I forget, I think it was one of the, it was when they were all discovering what they were good at. Mm-hmm. He goes, yes, and they're like, Raph, you're really good at being mad and stuff. He's like, I am, and then he like flips over the van. And the second I saw the pizza on it, I was like, oh, God, that's such a great way to integrate this in. And I was like, oh, cool, they got the van now. And then the fucking top gets cut off. I'm like, I guess we don't have that. Later. Don't need that. Either way, Superfly gets, I guess, demutated back into Oblivion, back into a normal fly. As we'll see him later, I assume that was him in the Maya Rudolph's character had taken. She's looking for the turtles, and of course, it's not going to be that hard to find them because today is their first day of high school.
Hell yeah!
And they have the moment where they all walk in and they're like, "Are we going to be accepted?" And of course, everyone thinks they're awesome. They cheer for them. They're all accepted. I think Donatello finds his people with the computer geeks. But Mikey's in an improv class, and I can't remember he had a funny. Dumb thing that he said in this class. Do you remember what it was? It's a funny pun.
It was like a dad joke.
It was an Australian joke. He's like, I'm in an Australian camera shop or something. Like specifically called out as an Australian.
Even Crikey. It was Crikey. Right?
Yeah.
Crikey was the punchline. I don't remember what it was.
Anyway, super fun. Leo gets the nerve to ask April to the prom. She says,
Australian shoe shop. And I think it was Crikey. Like
what
are
they called? Nikes in Australia. Yeah. Crikey. Yes. That's what it was. Yes. That was great. Good pull, Barrett. Of course, they end up going to prom, and April just slides in like, we're just doing this as friends, right? And it's like, ah. And then I believe that's how it ends, and then it pulls back. And, of course, Krang, or Maya Rudolph's character, is like watching them
I did love all of New York walking up to them once that moment happened. And
hey, here's my baby.
Sign my baby. You know, all of a sudden.
He's like, it's happening. Yes, we did it. So we get a lot of fun scenes in high school. And then I think we get the credit sequence first.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get
which the credit sequence was so awesome. We get the big flashy title cards of each of the characters. And the final one was an introducing Paul Rudd as Mondo Gecko.
Stole the show, like, man.
So interesting because you usually save that, obviously, for when it's an actor's first appearance on something. So there's either two things that happened here. One, this is the first time he's voiced something, and it's introducing him as a voice actor.
He's been in Bob's Burgers a bunch.
Or two, Seth Rogen is just being a dick.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious.
Stupid inside joke you can tell. Like,
it's just like, you know, Paul didn't know I was coming and saw it.
You don't have time for Matt Damon kind of like.
Yeah.
And then we get the post-credit sequence, or mid-credit sequence, I should say, where Maya Rudolph is like, hey, we got to get these turtles, but they're going to be hard to get. They've already thwarted all of my normal people. We need to call in a specialist. Bring me the Shredder. And the shot of as the camera pulls back and you just see him from behind with the badass shoulder pads. I'm
so
cool.
Let's go.
It was perfect. And it could have not worked so easily. Like after the movie we just saw, it's like, oh, do we really need Shredder? Does this make any sense that she would be calling in this guy, the Shredder, that looks like this? It fucking works, though. There's something about all the setup here that I'm like, you could have not ended this movie having me more excited for the sequel.
May as well. And that is TMNT Mutant.
I mean, are we going to pass over the whole Splinter and like the stink bug ending up together and making out and the stink bug throwing up in his mouth? Like, are we going to really just skip all of that, which was the highlight for the last like 5 minutes of the movie?
Splinter's whole concept is that it's really hard to find, you know, mutants, period, but mutants his age is a whole other age bracket. And finally he found her and he's like, I love her.
It's great.
So Jackie Chan.
Great line deliveries. Yep. Everything he said was great.
Perfect.
So now
Ragu.
Bagu. Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Rag Guys Talk Bad Guys here on TMNT in Review, or Tumnut, mm-hmm. as people like to refer to it. Tim, mm-hmm. I have a list for once in my entire life.
Do you have the updated list, including Out of the Shadows?
Do you want to read that for us?
Do you have the second one?
I have a list that has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 on there.
You're good. Go for it.
Okay, fantastic. The first top on our list of Rad Guys Talk Bad Guys is Winters, the General, and Karai from the animated movie.
From 07, yeah.
07. Then we have Krang and Bebop and Rocksteady.
AKA Craig is what I have written down.
Okay, perfect. And which one was that from?
That was Out of the Shadows. That's out of the second Shadows? Michael Bay.
Then we have Eric Sapp and the Samurai Armor from Wolverine.
Yep, that was from the first Michael Bay.
Mm-hmm. Shredder and the Foot Clan and those amazing shoulder pads from the 89 movie?
90 movie, 90 the original 90. One, yeah.
Super Shredder and the Wolf and Snapping Turtles from Secret of the Ooze. Mm-hmm. And then Lord Norinaga and Walker and the screenwriters of this film.
Part 3 was so bad.
Horrible. One of the worst movies we've ever reviewed.
That was tough. That was tough.
Bad movie.
But would you rather watch that or any of the Transformers movies?
Oh, most of the Transformers are better than that.
I don't know. Andy looks way more
I feel like The Last Knight's the only one that is, like, worse than that.
I'd say, but I, you know what? But I'd say Last Knight is funner to make fun of than that one.
Yeah, that movie was just not fun.
I'd go with Transformers over TMNT. Do we like the rankings? I think that's where it stands.
Damn.
That's where the review ends. Thanks for watching.
That's it, everybody.
Where do we want to put, I'd just say Superfly, I guess.
Yeah, Superfly and yeah, Superfly and the mutants, but whatever. Yeah. But I mean, like, yo, it's number one.
Number one.
Like, yeah. I don't even think that there's a question.
No, not at all. I mean, he did such a great job. Again, Ice Cube is just when he's in his Duffy, he's so fun to watch.
You are so right about, like, feeling the menacing threat. Like, I wasn't expecting to, in those moments where they're like, yeah, actually, you know, we're not super cool with this plan. And he's like, oh, so you're against us. Like, when he kind of turns and asks, I was like, God damn, Ice Cube, I wasn't expecting, like, this kind of range from you. It was great. Loved it.
And I think some of that comes from the writers as well. This is a sympathetic character. He's a three-dimensional character. He's not just...
They killed his father. Like,
he killed his father. He witnessed that. He didn't ask to be born, and there's no one like him, and he's not accepted in this world. So you understand where he's coming from. I think there's a line where he says, like, maybe I'm mixing my movies here, but I think, isn't it one line he's like, hey, you could be me. Like, you're just not there yet. It's a Splinter.
No, yeah. Like he kind of like says that.
Like, you're one bad you're day away from being me.
No, he says, like, you know, he's like, you don't have what it takes to push to how I feel. You and I are the same, except, like, you're too scared.
I mean, him walking away with all of his brothers and sisters in the vials, and then you see him raising them around the TV.
Yeah.
Like, all that stuff. It was just like, man, I care for this guy, and I see where he's coming from. He's just pushing it a little too hard. And, of course, the iced tea. Just the Cube. Grime, or excuse me, Cube, the grime in his voice when he gets into those lower registers. And then the humor is just perfect. Yep. He's just pitch perfect.
And he's just such a cute little baby. He's a fat little fly.
Fucking
awesome.
So we'll put that at number one, ladies and gentlemen.
One last thing I want to say about him is I love the line that is a reference to old Turtles movies of... he's holding, I think it was Mikey, and he's like, stop socking yourself. Yeah. He's like, it's great. Good for you, Ice Cube.
Putting it on the list. Super.
Put it on number one.
Mutant Mayhem.
Now it's time to rank the Tumnut universe. Yep. Currently, number one, TMNT, 2007. Number two, Secret of the Ooze. Number three, Ninja Turtles, 1990. Number four, Ninja Turtles, 2014. Number five, Out of the Shadows. And number six, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3.
Number one, what
Do
a bullet.
Do we even have to vote? Oh, yeah.
I mean, Jesus, it's number so one number one.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
I did like the 2007 one.
Me
this
too.
Is so much better than anything else.
Yeah, like, this is so far and away the number one. This is... Well, I'd say, like, maybe Spider-Man's a bit different because Spider-Verse and, no, never mind. I don't know if there's, what franchises is there one that's, like, the clear number one that we've done?
I'm sure there are some, but I can't.
Yeah.
I think Transformers, right? Didn't we all agree that Bumblebee was, like, far and away better than everyone?
Yeah, I guess so.
It? But not on this level.
No.
Look, I'm a sucker for the original movies. I liked Secret of the Ooze. I liked the original TMNT, the 1990. But this movie is the first actually honest to God nailed TMNT movie that they've ever made. Everything else has just been sort of like, how do we make these, like, cookie cutter heroes and sandwich it? And I'm like, that's not what this is about. This has a very distinct tone, vibe. They go out on a limb and they nail it. And I wouldn't be sure. I would not be surprised if some people walked out and were like, I didn't like that movie, which is good because they took risks and it shows in the actual material. So I think this is number one with a bullet.
Absolutely. I love this movie. I'm so happy that Ninja Turtles has something this good. It hasn't really yet, especially in this type of medium. So I'm so excited for the sequel. These kids are going places, man. They're talented.
Yeah.
Real talented.
I think Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg.
Turtles kids. Yeah. But I also love the push forward into unique animation. Like we've seen it with Spider-Verse, Mitchells versus Machines. This now, like Snoopy, Peanuts, whatever the fuck, a couple years ago, like, let's just do something different. We even saw a trailer for Disney's, is it Wish?
Yeah.
Wish, yeah.
Just different styles, different art styles. Not everything needs to look the same. And I love that we're just in this era that almost is the expectation. If something comes out and looks like the generic same shit we've seen for the last 20 years, it doesn't feel as important or interesting. So
part of the reason why Barbie's resonating so hard.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Getting the artists out there.
Jurassic Park. I think is maybe the other one.
Oh, that is
that's a good call, too. Answer. That's a great call.
All right.
Run away.
Well, that was Turtles in Review, everybody. If I'm doing my math right, I think next week is going to be Blue Beetle returning to the DCEU for one final time. How many times are we going to say it, Andy? How many final times can there be? There's still Aquaman 2.
No.
Yeah, yeah. Will it get delayed?
My man.
Is there? How many Aquamans are there?
There's only one, Joey.
Really?
There's only been one.
I would have sworn that you guys have already done Aquaman.
You're thinking maybe Shazam.
No, because that came out this year.
Jason Momoa's been in a couple movies as Aquaman.
Maybe you follow him on Instagram when he does all the thirst traps, because I sure do.
I don't think I do. I just swear that I've missed another Aquaman movie between the first one.
Didn't. Anyways, I love you all. Let us know what you think of Tumnut Mutant Mayhem. And if you'd appreciate it if we stopped saying Tumnut, we won't. But still want to hear your thoughts. Until next time.